With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
A friend of mine in the newsroom here at CBS Sports Radio said, "Oh, I thought you'd be taking off this Sunday night into Monday." And I said, "Why?" He said, "Because it's President's Day, or President's Day observed. It's President's Day weekend." No. I would rather work on holidays because there are fewer people here. And also the commute home in the morning, so quiet. None of that regular New York City traffic. If you don't know, our headquarters are located in Manhattan. And so it's not my choice, but this is where the job is. So this is where I work. And the commute can be a bear in the morning on the way home. So I enjoy working holiday mornings because it's like a ghost town in New York. And the commute, not that I'm timing it or anything, the commute can literally take 10 minutes fewer than what it does on a regular basis when there's all kinds of weekday morning traffic. So that's just from my perspective. But I also enjoy picking up the comp day. So working a day like this when it's a little easier, a little loosey goosey, no boss around, although I do love my boss, but just a lot quieter in the office. It's kind of fun to get stuff done and then go home and enjoy the holiday sleep. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in. A lot of you weighing in on both Twitter and Facebook. Your reaction to the All-Star game in Chicago. The format was different. The format would have been different even if Kobe Bryant had not passed away. So the format change originally didn't have anything to do with Kobe, but they tweaked it to make 24 the number they added to the third quarter totals to set the line, the number they needed to reach. So 157 was the target number. And there were pieces of Kobe Bryant and his daughter Gianna everywhere. Everywhere you looked. It's fitting that it's the best of the NBA, both past and present. Kobe's contemporaries and now those who idolized Kobe who gathered in Chicago. And as I said, I think if this had been any sooner, any closer to the helicopter crash, it would have been extremely difficult for the players to feel the joy, to display the pride in honoring Kobe and his impact. We know as human beings, time is both a blessing and a curse. Sometimes it can feel like a curse that time marches on when we're grieving, when we've lost someone that we love. It's not fair. Time really should stand still. It's not fair that the world keeps moving on. And yet it's also a blessing, a healing blessing, that time does continue to move and that time helps to heal our hearts. And not that we forget those people that we love, but that we get out from underneath that blanket of grief and remember them more with love and with hope and with joy. And we're grateful for the time we had with them. And you can see the NBA in that place now. Not that there weren't tears, but the attitude, the emotions have shifted to, hey, we want to make Kobe proud. And we heard a lot of that this weekend in Chicago. What did you think of the new format? I think it's really funny that some of you would like to change the regular season games to incorporate an untimed fourth quarter. No. Negative, Ghost Rider. I am not here for that. So Marty on Facebook says, "I love it. I wish they would add this type of finish to all NBA games." Daryl says, "It's not so bad." Okay, it's a ringing endorsement. William on Facebook, "It was a good game." Timothy says, "Great ending. The schoolyard style ending of a game turned up the intensity." So we'd love to hear from you, whether it be on Twitter or on Facebook. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Home is so much more than a house. It's the home of your dreams. And for 30 years, they've been making it better. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. So certainly the weekend festivities in Chicago, one of the major stories in sports. But I got to tell you, I was royally disappointed. It felt so anticlimactic after the buildup to the Daytona 500, and then they only managed 50 laps even. They only managed a few minutes. They managed 20 laps. Now, I hate the whole stage racing tweak, the adjustment they've made. I can't stand it. I think it's dumb. But I was still anxious to watch the Daytona 500, and the pre-race festivities were fantastic. I love NASCAR for a lot of reasons. I loved it more in the past when it was regular old racing, but one of the things I always appreciate about NASCAR is their tribute to our military. There's a heavy military presence, honoring the military, very patriotic. And all the races I've ever been to, that's an overarching theme, something NASCAR is really committed to. And especially at the Daytona 500, which they call the Great American Race, there are members of the military. There's always a military band. They present the colors. It was a member of the Air Force who sang the national anthem. It was pretty awesome. The president and his wife were there, and I've never seen this before because it's never happened. I don't know if we'll ever see it again. Regardless who was in the presidential motorcade, to see the beast, which is what they call the presidential limousine, pacing the field at Daytona, the presidential limousine was going around the track at Daytona. It was pretty incredible. And so with the flags flying, the American flags flying on the corners of the car, and we got some of the specs of this vehicle. First of all, it weighs 22,000 pounds. The car weighs 11 tons. So they didn't get it up to full speed. If you know anything about Daytona, you know they have banked corners. And so in order to beat the centrifugal force and not slide down, so you have to beat gravity and not slide down, I should say beat gravity. In order to get enough centrifugal force to stay up on the bank, you have to be going at least 70 miles per hour. At Talladega, it was one of my favorite things to sit in turn one and watch those cars. They're almost so far up in the air and going so fast that they're almost perpendicular to the ground. Anyway, though the presidential limousine can go 70 miles per hour, they choose to keep its top speed a secret. It's very top secret. They kept it on the apron as opposed to up on the bank, which that would have been badass. But anyway, this thing weighs 11 tons and has 8-inch thick bulletproof glass. It's a tank, in other words, and it can't go anywhere without its Secret Service escort. And so they have the pace car, which was driven by a WWE star. I know nothing about WWE, but it was him in the pace car, and then the presidential limousine, and then two members of the Secret Service in their black scary SUVs. It was pretty awesome to watch, and they have all these like pre-race festivities. They finally get on the racetrack, and Dale Earnhardt Jr. is supposed to wave the green flag, and just as they are about to come around to take the green, the sprinkles start in one or two of the corners. So the racetrack is so big, you can put a football field on the grass right in front of the start finish line, like in the infield, just below the start finish line. You could actually put an entire football field there. It's huge. It's like a 2.5 mile track, and so you could have rain in one corner and not have rain in the other corner. And there were these pop-up showers. So they had to stop the race. They stopped it for a bit. They finally get everybody out there once they've dried the track. And they go around, they warm up, they do 20 whole laps, and then boom, right into more showers. And once the entire track gets soaked, it's impossible to dry it and make it so that it's safe for them to race, but also to do it with any type of consideration of time, because it could take hours to dry the track once it's soaked. So they postponed it, which was, again, so anticlimactic after all the excitement and the pre-race festivities. Lots of celebrities there. I remember one time, I've never been to Daytona for a race, but one time I was at Talladega, and again, they do all this like pre-race stuff. They were actually filming a couple scenes of Talladega Nights. So that movie with Will Ferrell, they filmed it, and they needed all the fans to be in the stands. And so that was part of the pre-race festivities. They had Will Ferrell and some of the other actors there on the track, and we got to be extras as fans. fans in the stands. Anyway, so I was all jazzed up about the Daytona 500, and it was the perfect Sunday for them to do it because they're, other than the XFL and a few college basketball games, and yes, the NHL, the marquee event of the weekend was the All-Star game in the NBA, and that wasn't until the nighttime. So it was a missed opportunity, a missed window, and they won't get nearly as many people who will be able to tune in at 4 o'clock Eastern time, so 4 o'clock Daytona time on Monday afternoon. You'll get some people who maybe catch the ending, but I mean, think about it. You're talking a 1 o'clock green flag for the rest of the race on the West Coast, and so you're just missing a prime window on Sundays. So that was too bad. I was disappointed by that, and I don't know how much of the race I will see. I'll maybe catch some of it, but Mondays is a different schedule for all of us. So that didn't happen. I know some of you were tweeting me and Facebooking me about the XFL, though I didn't see nearly as much of the excitement over it. Now, I don't want to judge by social media, but it didn't seem like there was nearly as much buzz in week two of the XFL, though I did see a couple promos on Fox during the Daytona 500 coverage in which they previewed the fact they'll have more games coming up next weekend. So Fox does a good job with it, and I'm glad that people are getting to see it on network TV as opposed to needing cable to see a lot of the games. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Meanwhile, for Major League Baseball, the criticisms of both Rob Manfred and the Astros continue. For those of you who haven't heard Cody Bellinger from Friday, we'll get to that, his reaction to the apologies that the world watched on Thursday at spring training. But also, this is kind of an interesting twist. Now, you can believe him if you like, but Tony Kemp is a former Astro. He was with Houston from 2016 through 2018, which of course means he was part of the locker room and the clubhouse when they were stealing signs with the monitors in the dugouts and the banging on trash cans. He says that he told them he didn't want any help, that he refused to participate in the cheating, and that it did not. I mean, he was fourth outfielder or something like that. So maybe there weren't nearly as many opportunities with him. But he says that he did not want any benefits from the sign stealing, and so he wasn't a part of it. And now he's with Oakland, and he's got strong words for his former teammate.
Honestly, it's they haven't owned up to any of their actions. The way they've handled things is not right. They've cheated us as players, and it's that they can't take responsibility for their actions and try to make things better. Instead, they're just sweeping things under the rug and just doing their own thing. And to me, that just doesn't sit right.
Tony Kemp, former Houston outfielder who was with them for 3 years, and his tenure in Houston certainly encompassed the area, the time surrounding these sign-stealing schemes. It was interesting, and we'll let you hear more from Carlos Correa as well. He did an interview with MLB Network, and he actually mentioned Tony Kemp. I don't think it was in reference to what Kemp said about how, you know, these guys haven't owned up to it, and it's BS. It's beep. But it was kind of funny to hear Correa then drop Tony Kemp's name in reference to the whole Jose Altuve pulling off his jersey, not pulling off his jersey mess that many people point to as evidence, must be proof that he was wearing a buzzer. So Cody Bellinger and Carlos Correa coming up. The story that reminds me of Deflategate, because it will not die. And if we're still talking about this in a year, I'm going to be as sick of this as I was of Deflategate. Oh my gosh, that was of all the stories my entire career that I've ever had to talk about for an extended period of time, that one was the one that it made me want to take time off just to avoid it because I was so sick of it. I know many of you felt the same way. All right, so you'll hear from Cody Bellinger, who is one of those Dodgers, part of the 2017 that's not willing to let it go. And again, baseball, you don't get to tell us when we have to move on. You don't get to decide that. Astros, that's not your decision. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast. Hungry for a taste of the most delicious audio of the night? You came to the right place. It's time for Bite Me with Amy Lawrence. Here's Amy Lawrence.
As if we can't get enough. I feel as though Cody Bellinger expressed himself in a way that, many fans can identify with and appreciate, because he did not hold back. When he saw the Astros' apologies from late last week, he had some strong words. As a member of the 2017 Dodgers that played to a seventh game against those Astros who were stealing signs. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. Cody Bellinger had a big-time audience, and he definitely held court.
I thought the apologies were whatever. I thought Jim Crane's was weak. I thought Manfred's punishment was weak, giving him immunity. These guys were cheating for 3 years.
3 years is what Cody Bellinger believes. I don't know that he needs any more evidence for his claims than do some others who have who found me to say there's no doubt that Jose Altuve was wearing a buzzer. All the proof we need is that he didn't want someone to rip off his shirt. We'll get to that coming up. Bellinger looks back at some of the other impacts that the Astros cheating had on that 17 season.
Altuve stole an MVP from Judge in 17. Everyone knows they stole the ring from us, but you know, it's over. They apologized. They went together and apologized, and it is what it is now.
I don't really think he believes that. The part about it being over, not the part about Jose Altuve stealing the 2017 MVP from Aaron Judge, or the fact that the Astros stole a World Series from us. I'm never letting that Cody Bellinger audio disappear. They stole the World Series from us. I mean, you can imagine that's how many of the Dodgers feel when they came so close. But again, I don't think Cody Bellinger is that far off into the deep end. I think he speaks what a lot of baseball fans feel as well. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Now, about this whole Jose Altuve shirt mess. I don't want to call it a scandal because I don't know it rises to that level. But Jose Altuve hits a walk-off home run against Aroldis Chapman, doesn't want his teammates to rip his jersey. He later claimed it was because his wife would get really mad at him. And again, Cody's not buying it.
I don't know what human hits a walk-off home run against Aroldis Chapman to send your team to the World Series.
What human?
And one has the thought to say, don't rip my jersey off. But two, go in the tunnel, change your shirt, and then come out and do your interview. Like that makes no sense to me.
This is your reigning National League MVP, by the way. And as I say, had a very large audience. Probably many people who were nodding along with him as Bellinger was talking. So that's what he had to say about how asinine Altuve's actions were, in his opinion, after hitting a walk-off home run. What an aberration they were for what most humans would do. In fact, he said, I don't know what other human would act like that. Well, Carlos Correa has the explanation for why Altuve did what he did.
2019, nobody wore buzzers. That's a lie. The reason Jose Altuve didn't want to get his shirt ripped off, I'm going to tell you. Earlier in the year, he hit a walk-off at Minute Maid Park. I ripped off his shirt with Tony Kemp. There is pictures of that. There is videos of that. You can go look at it. I ripped off his shirt. His wife told my wife, why is Carlos ripping Altuve's shirt? Like, I don't like that. It's because he got an unfinished tattoo on his collarbone right here that honestly looked terrible. It was a bad tattoo. And he didn't want nobody to see it. He didn't want to show it at all.
Wait, so which is it? Is it the fact that his wife said to Carlos's wife, why is Carlos ripping off my guy's shirt? I don't like that. Or is it because of the bad tattoo? And why have we ever heard about the bad tattoo before now? Now, I don't believe they were wearing buzzers. I'm not just going to take some example of him not wanting his shirt ripped off as proof. That's ridiculous. The only way that you believe that's proof is if you are bound and determined to believe they were cheating all of the last, what, three seasons. So that's not enough evidence for me. Major League Baseball, I don't think, is in any way trying to protect the Astros now. They want it all out there, which is why they gave these players immunity, because they wanted to be able to tell the whole story and have a complete investigation. So I don't think baseball would protect them. Why bother protecting them? Have you already exposed what you believe was happening in 2017 and 18? So why protect them in 2019? So that doesn't make any sense either. But I did think it was funny that Carlos Correa mentions Tony Kemp. Tony Kemp and I ripped off his jersey. Now, I don't know if it's because he heard Kemp's comments and he wanted to make sure everyone knew Kemp was involved in 2018 or not. But yes, that part was kind of funny. Carlos Correa on MLB Network and has his own special response to Cody Bellinger.
When he talks about that we cheated for 3 years. I mean, he either doesn't know how to read, is really bad at reading comprehension, or is just not informed at all. But the commission's report clearly says that all those activities were conducted in 2017. 2018, nothing happened. 2019, nothing happened. It was just talented players playing the game of baseball with passion and winning ball games.
And not winning, I might add. I mean,
erroneous on both counts.
I do think it's funny that... Amusing would be more accurate than funny. It's amusing to hear players inside baseball decide, screw it. I don't care what the rules are about commenting when other teams get punished. You know that baseball essentially sent a memo to all the teams after this investigation was unveiled to say it's against the rules for other teams and players to comment about the punishment and the discipline that's handed down against a particular franchise. And once the Dodgers kind of opened that door with a tweet that said, hey, baseball won't let us talk about it, you could very much read between the lines. Now it's a free-for-all. Now it doesn't matter. You've got former Astros. You've got current players, the MVP. You've got pitchers. You've got guys who are part of that team. What you don't have is the current Astros actually saying, I'm sorry. It's an apology without apologizing. Don't those annoy you when someone comes to you and says, I'm sorry you feel that way? At least be transparent. If you only are sorry that you got caught, at least say that. Hey, I'm really sorry we got caught, because it puts us in an awkward position. And I'll just say this too. I feel like those people who own up to their cheating generally get absolved and are given second chances much more quickly. Do y'all remember how Andy Pettit admitted that he used PEDs at one point? He said he did it twice, right? Unless I'm misremembering. That was the word, actually. That was the word Roger Clemens used about Andy Pettit. He misremembered. Anyway, that's a totally different tack. Pettit admitted it right away and said he tried it twice. He didn't like it. Yes, he did it. He wishes he hadn't, but he never did it again. Nobody considers him a cheater. Nobody considers him a guy that should be punished or considered part of the steroid era. No, because he admitted it and he came clean. Do you know what Lance Armstrong could have done to save himself a ton of money and really put the kibosh on his cheating scandal? If he had just come out and admitted it the first time that one of his teammates fingered him or the science pointed to him cheating, if he had come out then and said, yes, I did, but I'm never going to do it again. If he'd come out then and admitted it, he wouldn't be one of the most tarnished names in sports. If you cop to it, you admit it, you say you're sorry, generally humans are more apt to forgive and forget. Again, nobody considers Andy Pettit to be part of the baseball steroid era, other than the fact that he played then. But nobody mentions his name when you're talking about those who abuse PEDs. By the way, another MVP comparing the steroid era to the Astros' sign-stealing schemes, I was a bit agape when I was hearing him. I don't think I agree with him, but given his age, I guess it's all about recency bias. And then we'll take your calls, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. Man, the show is flying by. We're heading into our final 90 minutes now. I'd love to hear from you on Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page. Good to have you on board. If you're working like we are or you're out of your regular routine, send us a tweet or a Facebook post and let us know where you're listening. It's always good to hear from you around the country.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
The owner of the Astros trying to tell us when it's time to drop it and move on, similar to Rob Manfred. Yeah, it's not up to you to say it didn't impact the game or to backtrack. Well, I didn't say it didn't impact the game. Actually, that's exactly what you said. What a mess. The whole thing was a mess. Between Jim Crane and Alex Bregman, the most awkward apology ever. And the fact that that guy brings such intensity and life and energy, he's almost ADHD. He cannot sit still during games. And yet you put a microphone in front of him when he needs to own up and apologize for his part in stealing signs with electronics, and he can barely speak. It was so insincere. At least that's how it came across. It did not come across as genuine. Remember when Kobe Bryant first addressed the crowds at Staples Center? This was it would have been the Friday after. Did I say Kobe Bryant? I'm sorry. Did I say LeBron? Shoot, I'm so messed up. Sorry. When LeBron James, Kobe always spoke from the heart. When LeBron James first addressed Staples Center after the passing of Kobe Bryant, it would have been the Friday after the helicopter crash on a Sunday. And he acknowledged that they were trying to accommodate the TV schedule and they were trying to stay on time and that he was only supposed to be making a couple of quick comments and he was supposed to stick to his script and that he wasn't going to do that bleep. He dropped a swear word just for emphasis. And he spoke from the heart and he didn't use a script and he didn't look at a teleprompter. No, he spoke from his heart and it was perfect. There are times when reading from a script comes across as insincere, comes across as unemotional, comes across as mechanical and robotic. There are times when people can read from a script and you can't really tell. Actors, of course, actors and anchors very often have teleprompters and you can't always tell that they're reading. But in the case of Bregman, it was memorized, it was scripted, and it felt like it had no heart. His statement was devoid of heart. And that's what people want. That's what I want as a fan of baseball. I want to know that this matters deep down in your heart, in your soul, that you feel terrible that you screwed up and that you misled the fans. And that you cheated those who worked just as hard as you have to get to the major leagues. That you cheated, you stole, you connived, you covered it up. And now you have the nerve to tell us that we should get over it. Or that it didn't have an impact. That you didn't steal the World Series in 2017. Well, how the hell do you know? You don't know. It very well could have had enough of an impact that the Dodgers would have won if everything had been on the up and up.
You're a phony.
Yeah, those results definitely feel phony. If for no other reason than we don't actually know. And it didn't even have to be in the World Series necessarily. It could have been earlier in the season. A big hit that they desperately needed. Now, is it bigger than the PED era? Is it bigger than what was a prevailing use of performance-enhancing drugs going back to, I mean, it's hard to even say when it started and when it ended, but going back to the days of Jose Canseco and Mark McGwire and Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, and we'll never know, in my estimation, we'll never know the total impact of PED usage on the game. And it continued for years. I mean, Manny, Manny being Manny. We're talking about even guys in the early 2000s, like Manny Ramirez, like others. Now, probably not as prevalent, but some of the best hitters in the game, some of the best pitchers in the game. These are guys that are connected to PEDs, as opposed to this sign stealing being limited to, say, one or two franchises. We're still waiting on the commissioner's report about the Red Sox. He said it won't be the end of this week, but the end of the following week, so closer to the beginning of March. But I guess it depends on which era you live through, which era you play in. Chris Bryant believes that the sign stealing is the worst of the worst.
I personally think it's worse than steroids. I really do. I mean, it's steroids. You still have to compete and hit the ball. You know it's coming. I mean, off of these pitchers, like guys throwing, you know, upper 90s with really good curveballs and sliders, and you can totally formulate an unbelievable game plan based on certain things if you know what they're coming.
So Chris Bryant thinks this is far worse because as a professional hitter, if you know what's coming, well, then you are far more prepared than if you were taking PEDs. That's an opinion. That's his opinion. As someone who began my career about the time that the steroids era was the number one story in sports, remembering the Mueller, no, not the Mueller report. What was the name of the was it the Mueller report? Shoot, I get all these reports mixed up.
Yeah, Mitchell report.
Mitchell report. Thank you. I knew it was an M. I mean, I remember I wasn't in network radio at the time, but I was working in local radio. I was in Oklahoma when the Mitchell report came out. And I remember reading it and poring over it. And it was still a major story for years. So I don't think I agree that the impact is the same, but the fact that it involves a recent World Series champion, I can understand why there are guys in the game today who believe that. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Let's talk to Bob, who's listening in Maryland. Bob, welcome.
Yes, good morning, young lady.
Hello.
I love your show, and I love you.
Oh, thank you. Love you, too.
And I'm well into my 80s, and as you know, and I want to talk about this escapade that Houston was involved in.
Okay.
I remember the guys that did it straight, like Ted Williams, when he gave up 5 years to the United States military in World War II and Korea. He said the best time he ever had was when he was in the military, not playing baseball. But that's beside the point. It's a long story. It's easy to catch individuals in a situation like this. But this is a whole team you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
This is the hierarchy of that team. They all knew. And this business about not passing down the memo was to ace up their sleeve because they knew if they got caught, they could always use that as an excuse and an alibi. These guys are smart. They're not dumb. And they knew what they were doing. And you didn't have to give immunity to all 25 players. Just pick out five. And if their story is the same, you know they're telling the truth then. Just use those five, and the administration and the other 20, they can go to hell because they're going to suffer for this through the public. And these poor babies, they're going to have to suffer for the rest of their lives. Is that right? They're going to have to suffer. How about a guy that goes to work 5 days a week, or a woman, and worked for 40 years. Don't you think they suffered too? That they wanted to have to go to work, but they did it because it was necessary, and they did it clean. How about the ball players that did it clean during the anabolic steroid era?
Yeah.
And all this, the guys that were clean, like Bond, they never had a test. Well, you didn't have a test until 2007 because of that union. It was known for 15 years. What they were doing, and they didn't get a test until 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're 38 years old, like Bonds was, you do not hit 73 home runs when you never even hit 50 in your whole life in your prime.
Mm.
It's common sense. Connect the dots. These guys are dirty as hell, and then come up with this business. This commissioner, He ought to be kicked. Look, I want to tell you something. Thought Giambani did the right thing with Rose. He was a minute and a half. Because Bart Giamatti said he had come into me and told me the whole story and when he started, I would have probably suspended him for a year. But he continued to lie.
He did. He lied for a long time. Yeah.
He was a perpetual liar. The exact truth. And when Bart Giamatti died 2 years later from a massive heart attack, he was only in his 50s, Pete Rose couldn't wait to jump on his grave. And that's the kind of guy that Pete Rose is. He's scum. And these guys with the garbage cans and beating on the garbage cans, they were right at home, weren't they?
I mean,
that escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand fast.
I think that I agree with you about the scoffing at their suffering, because they're not really suffering if it doesn't hurt them in their pocketbooks or if they don't lose anything. And they're not losing anything. They still all have jobs. They're all making money. They still have their rings. So that part I totally agree with. And also the fact that Pete Rose lied for a very long time, Bob.
One thing. My late brother is one of the greatest generation. He fought the Japanese for 3 years in the South Pacific for $20 a month and $10 a month in combat pay. He took that $20 a month combined with the government backing it up on another $20 to make it $40. He sent that whole thing home for all those months, 3 years, to my mother and father. The only thing he was left with was his combat pay. He was making $2.50 a week for fighting the Japanese. And his son was in combat, his oldest son, in Vietnam. And I was in the military in between them. And I'm telling you this, they don't know what the hell hard it means. My father worked for 59 years of hard work, labor, laborious, heavy work. And they didn't let him go until he was 72 years old. And when he came, I was in the service at the time. My sister called me about it. 72 years old, 30 years with the last company. He never made more than $60 a week in his life. And then they let him out and let him go and so forth and the way he did it. And he came home crying. I never saw my father cry. But I'll tell you this, when he came home, the first thing he said to my mother, 72 years old and working for 59 years at slave labor, really, I lost my job. 72 years old.
Bob, I'm so sorry. We have to let you go because you're about to hear the music here in a couple of seconds. But I appreciate you sharing part of your family story, and I would agree with you that this is not real suffering. Also, thank you for your service to our country, and thank you for listening to the show. It's always good to hear from you. I think you pretty much covered all of it and probably expressed the emotions of many people who are in the same boat and think this whole thing is a joke. But you expressed it much better than many of us would. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Good morning, CBS Sports Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.